As Russia's war in Ukraine continues, many eyes were watching Moscow today as the city hosted the annual Victory Day parade. With me via Skype to talk about what happened there and some of the other big global stories to watch out for this week is the BBC's Rob Hugh Jones. And Rob, what is the significance of this particular event in Russia?
Well, yes, that's right, Mark. So we see a Victory Day parade in Moscow every year. There are vast numbers of planes and military equipment and soldiers on view in Red Square, resplendent Red Square. And in the background, of course, all the great colors and the golden domes and so on of Red Square. But in the foreground, you see the dark green military fatigues of the soldiers and the military equipment and the tanks and so on. And they're in formation as they drive past President Vladimir Putin, and the soldiers turn to him and salute as they do so. And above, you will see the planes flying in a Z formation. And Z, of course, is the symbol that Russian troops are using in Ukraine. And that's a hint, really, of the significance of today's Victory Day parade in Moscow, which happens every day to mark the Soviet contribution to World War II. Of course, the Russians, the Soviets, lost 27 million of their citizens in World War II, more than any other country. So it's a very poignant day. But at the moment, it's even more poignant because of Russia's activity in Ukraine. So we were looking out to see what Mr. Putin was actually going to say. You know, was there any sense of intent, like what are his next steps in Ukraine? And what he did say was that it was the right decision. In his speech, he said, NATO is exploring lands close to Russia. He said Ukraine might get nuclear weapons, although there's no obvious evidence for that. He also said that fighting for Ukraine is what Russia's soldiers' predecessors had fought for in World War II. And of course, what he's referring to there is the demilitarization, the denazification that he keeps talking about in Ukraine. And he's drawing a link between that and fighting the Nazis in World War II. He even called the Russian attack on Ukraine a preemptive strike. So the way he's framing this is that NATO and the West are the provocateurs. They are the enemy. They were encircling Russia, putting pressure on Russia, and that Russia was forced into a preemptive strike, as he calls it. So that's really what we've seen at this Victory Day parade this year, today in Moscow.
So, Rob, following on from that, later this week we may see Finland make an official bid to join the NATO military alliance. Why will the BBC be watching that so carefully?
Yes, so we'll be watching that very carefully because this week we expect Finland and Sweden, those two Scandinavian Nordic countries in the north of Europe, of course, we expect them to give some very clear indication about them wanting to join the Western military alliance, NATO. And that, of course, is very significant because there are some 30 countries of NATO now. And if Finland and Sweden were to join as well, because of what Russia is doing in Ukraine, that would be quite something. If you consider, when you look at a map, Finland has a land border with Russia of 830 miles. So that means if Finland joins NATO, then the border between Russia and the NATO bloc will effectively double overnight. So that's quite a big deal. And of course, Finland and Sweden, Finland in particular, have a lot of military hardware, and particularly people, to contribute to NATO. And of course, it would be ironic because Mr. Putin has been fighting back NATO, has been saying NATO is the provocateur, NATO is encircling his country and so on. So he has justified his acts in Ukraine as a way of getting back at NATO. Ironic then that NATO would actually enlarge as a result of his activity. But we're looking out for that. We may well see official applications this coming week from Finland and from Sweden.
And finally, Rob, two big political stories in Asia to keep an eye on this coming week, one in South Korea and one in the Philippines.
Well, yes, in East Asia, absolutely. The big ones are really the Philippines and South Korea this week. The Philippines happening right now. The polls closed earlier today. And we're looking at a win for Ferdinand Marcos Jr. And that name will be a name that people remember because Ferdinand Marcos Sr., ruled the Philippines in the 1970s. He ruled for two decades, actually. And his image is not a good one. He is remembered for having embezzled all kinds of money for his family. His wife had, if you remember, Imelda Marcos had 3,000 pairs of shoes, and that little tidbit of news got around the world very, very quickly, and she's remembered for that ever since. So he took a lot of money out of the Philippines for himself and his family. And also he imposed martial law, and that meant that he clamped down on his opponents, and many of them were arrested, tortured, and many of them disappeared as well. But now, all these years later, his son, his only son, is in the box seat to win this election in the Philippines. So it looks like we're going to have another Marcos as president in the Philippines. And his running mate is Sara Duterte, and she is the daughter of the current president, Rodrigo Duterte, who himself is extremely controversial because of his war on drugs, which was extremely brutal in the period that he has been the leader, and his term limit has come up, so this is why the election is happening. So we're watching this, and we're seeing what Bongbong Marcos, and that's the name given to Ferdinand Marcos Jr., what kind of a leader he will be for the Philippines, which, let's not forget it, is 110 million people in East Asia and a very significant country. We'll be interested to see what his attitude will be to the world, but particularly to China, which is the big player, of course, on the block in that region.
All right, that is the BBC's Rob Hugh Jones in London. Rob, thanks as always.
Thanks very much, Mark.